Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hollywood Unlocked, Uncensored. What up, everybody? This is Jason Lee, and this is Hollywood Unlocked, Uncensored.
And what's up? It's your girl, April Jones. What's up?
Yep, it's DJ Damage. Let's get this show started. Hey.
All right, cool. Before we get started, make sure you download and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. You can watch us on YouTube, so you see all of the hilarity in live and in living color. And also, now we're on iHeartRadio. So what's woo-hoo-hoo good? This, can I just tell you, I have an umbrella in Los Angeles.
Yo, it's crazy rain.
You know what?
Like real rain.
Los Angeles has, like, people are out with umbrellas. So I'm walking to the bank today. And I have my little umbrella on, you know, whatever, my little camo coat, because I feel like I'm in some type of woods and shit. And it's a man sitting on the corner growling.
Okay, goodbye.
I ain't gonna lie, he scared me.
That's Hollywood for you.
No, but don't growl. Like,
he was growling at you or just growling?
No. He wasn't growling as I approached. And then as I got closer, he started growling. So I just.
You always have the weirdest experiences, Jason.
I do. I told a story on the show before where somebody was sitting outside and asked me if I wanted some cocaine. Did I tell you?
Yes, yep. You told us that.
Yeah, that was
one of the first stories.
So this guy had basically offered me cocaine. And when I said no, he asked me if I was a top or bottom because he would have sex with me for money.
He wanted you to pay him?
Yes. talk about your house or mine. Nigga, what?
He was ready.
I ain't got time for that. All right, so I guess we would just, we have a guest coming in today. Today's show, you know, a lot of people out there comment about depression, and we've talked a lot on the show about different issues. Have you guys ever experienced a time of depression or a period of depression?
Oh, yeah.
For sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I experienced postpartum depression with my daughter, and that was a real thing. And I honestly, I knew something was wrong, but I didn't, like, know what it was. And it wasn't until I, like, spoke to my midwife and was like, you know, I'm waking up every morning and I'm just kind of like crying and I would feel a certain particular way.
So break postpartum depression down, because I know
it's a real thing.
I know Cardi was afraid of catching that. And I know a lot of women do get it. I think Serena Williams talked about what is postpartum depression?
Basically, after having a baby is postpartum depression. And when your body, you know, all the hormones that you have when you're pregnant, and then when you have your baby, it kind of like all those hormones just drop. And some people can handle it, and some people obviously can't. And I was fine. With my son, no problem. It was easy pregnancy and all that. And even though my daughter was an easy pregnancy, I fell into a postpartum depression.
So when the hormones drop, that means, so you literally like one day feel one way, and then after
like
the
you're
birth,
fine. It's like, but some women don't even know that they're in a depression. Like,
but is it because you're now separated from your baby being in you?
It's no, but yeah, like, I mean, but imagine all the hormones you have when you're pregnant that are supposed to help with the baby, and then all of a sudden the baby is not in you, your whole body is just trying to come back to that normal state, you know? Mm. And so because of that, literally I fell into a depression.
So how did you, you're out of it now?
Yeah, but I think it was more psychological too, because when I had to go to therapy and all that, and they were like, oh, okay, well, what was your relationship with your mom? Did you have any issues? And it was like subconsciously all these things that I had dealt with as a child into that. They had to kind of heal me with that. They had to do some work.
So what about you?
Yeah, I've probably been depressed for the past like 4 years.
You feel you're depressed now?
No, I'm finally like coming out of it. Because like she said, you don't really even notice you're in it until you really like kind of get older and step back and look at your situation. But yeah, I've been depressed for a long time.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've been very open about my death with my brother. That's something I think for the first time this year I'm deciding to really work through, because I say, oh, I'm over it or whatever, but you really never know. It'd be one trigger, that trigger. Something happened and then boom, all those feelings come back again. So today's show, Tyler Jacob is coming on. He's an artist model here in Hollywood. On social, it went viral that he was in a relationship with a fashion stylist named Michael Mann, who's worked with Brandy and a lot of different people. Who committed suicide. And I've always and he was one of those things where I would just go to their pages to try to find out like how does someone go from apparently being very happy to just killing themselves? And then two, how does a person in a relationship with a partner who leaves them behind? Like they were engaged. So we're going to talk to him and find out more about him.
Should be dope.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll be able to share that with people. But we were talking before the show about Ja Rule and this guy, because I'm now in the process of building a music festival.
Billy McFarlane.
And I'm using Billy McFarlane and Ja Rule as a compass of not where to go. So for people that don't know, what did they do with their little festival?
They had a huge, first it was an app. It was called the Fire app. When I guess it was like a mediation for regular people to book artists. And to catapult that, they did a festival. It was the Fire Festival. It was supposed to be on this beautiful island in the Bahamas. It had all these villas, and it was supposed to be like, you know, experience where regular people can interact with artists and have models there. It was just supposed to be this like huge utopia, and it came out to be like a very big scam. They have two documentaries out on it right now, Fire Fraud and another one that's on Netflix. I don't know the name, but very interesting set of things going on right there.
Well, he only got, well, you said he got 6 years in prison, right? And he scammed people out about $20
million? Over $23 million he scammed people for that particular festival.
Well, look, So the people they thought they were going to this villa, and they ended up in tents with bags of like ham and cheese sandwiches.
Yeah, so if you watch the documentary, they had a 4-month layout to create the whole utopia. And everybody was saying like, it's impossible to do. You can't build a whole basically venue, whatever, in 4 months, but they wanted to do it anyway. And literally they worked up until the day of people started flying there, and they had nothing ready. Like they had tents, but people had to get their own beds.
And then they got stranded there.
Yeah, and a lot of people got stranded there because they only had like those little planes. What they call Cessnas?
Look,
I don't know the name. Cessnas. Yeah, they're looking at me. Cessnas.
It really looked
Cessna
bad.
Planes. I got you.
And I'm gonna tell you, as far as tents go, I'm not even the type of, I can't even go camping. I don't camp.
Oh, they was camping.
First of all, I don't sleep on the ground.
Me neither.
I don't sit on the ground.
I don't think it's being bougie. It's just, rocks and bugs and the idea of like a bear opening the thing. I ain't got time for that.
But the funny part is because they were trying to raise so much money, they were charging $23,000, $250,000. So the packages were crazy. So the people there were like some of the richest people, period, that was going through this. So I thought that was just funny.
Well, at least they got to experience poverty. For
yeah, me. Exactly.
But they normally like doing that stuff.
But they were having a ball. They was drinking. They were turning.
Well, the way this whole conversation came about, for those wondering, is I was saying that, you know, like, I'm not a scammer anymore, but, you know, I'm from Northern California, the Bay Area. We the home of the scam. So, I mean, I went through the whole, I didn't do this, but like, I went through the whole check and bank fraud stuff. Remember when people was doing the bank scam?
Oh, yes, God, I was a part of that too back then in college.
Wait. We just not going to bring nothing up.
I didn't do, like, someone did it lied to you. To me. Yeah.
Listen, there's people that slide
and
in my
use
DMs
my bank account
all the time and say, hey, man, for some extra dollars, let me know what bank you bank with. Like, bro, you ain't fucking me up with Wells Fargo. Me and Wells Fargo are in a relationship. That's my bitch. All right, but anyway, we have Tyler Jacob in the building. Welcome to the show.
Oh my God, guys.
Welcome, brother.
Thank you guys for having me.
So is it Tyler Jacob or Tyler Jacobs?
Tyler Jacob with...
Okay, with no S.
No S.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you're from... I've seen you around Hollywood for a little while. And of course, I know you because of you run into people in this... This city, people think Hollywood is really large, but it's really not.
Hell no, yeah.
So you're from New Jersey.
I'm from Camden, New Jersey, yep.
Hey.
Nice.
Representing Camden, CMD.
How did you get here to LA? Like, what was your story in getting here?
The funny thing about that is that when I was 17, I moved to New York City. And so... when I moved to New York City, the purpose of doing that was to become a singer. You know what I mean? I wanted to somehow make it in the music industry. I did everything that I felt like I could in New York City. And one day I woke up, I got really just, you know, tired. I was tired of the struggle of New York City. And I said, I just need to go. You know what I mean? And I packed what I could into my car and I drove from New York City all the way over here without having any family.
What?
Without having no family, without having no friends. Like, I didn't know where I was going. I'd never been to LA before.
Wow.
So when I got here, it was just like...
Wait, hold on. So you didn't have friends. You didn't have friends. You didn't have family. Nah. You didn't know anybody.
Nope.
You had never been. And so you just get in your car and drive.
Got in my car.
It's a bad risk.
You know what it is? I was signed to an independent label in New York City called Kempire Radio. I mean, Kempire Records.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
Yeah. And, you know, we did a lot of things together. And when I got dropped from his label, it was in really embarrassing for me at that time. You know what I mean? So a lot of people in New York City as an up-and-coming artist knew me, and I didn't want to show face at that moment. It was just like I wanted to go start over, start fresh. And when I got here, it didn't matter to me that I didn't have family and friends. It was just like I'm going to come here. Nobody knows me. Nobody knows anything about my mm-hmm. past. You know what I mean? It's a fresh start. And literally probably 3 months after I got here is when I met Michael. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was my whole LA experience.
And so when you came here, for the pursuit of music.
Yep.
And that was your passion.
Yep, to this day.
And so when you came here, you're 29.
29 years
and
old.
And so you're gay.
I'm gay.
And you've been gay your whole life or was it an evolution? Because I'm telling you, sexuality for a lot of people is an evolutionary process.
Right. Definitely an evolutionary process for me because for sure when I was a kid, I was really confused. You know, I didn't know what was going on with me. I knew that I had an attraction to men, but I also had an attraction to females. And my first experience sexually was with females.
So did you consider yourself bisexual or was it, there was no label, it was just...
You know what? Growing up in the hood, you don't really know labels like that. It's just like, you just don't know what the fuck is going on. You know what I mean? You're like, do I like that? Like, I don't know.
You preach to the choir over here. Shit, I had a girlfriend named Nikki and a boyfriend named Calvin. Okay.
But what was that like? Like, people don't understand how crazy Camden can be. That's not like a typical spot to grow up at. Like, Camden, New Jersey is very rough. So what was it like going through those emotions and also living in Camden?
You know what? When you grow up in the hood, you don't know you're in the hood. And that was my situation. So I didn't know any better. I grew up going outside, not fearing anything because, you know, I got into fights my entire life. So it was the norm.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? It was something that I would grow up and just think that it was normal. Like, I would go through the day. You wanted to fight me? Let's go. You know what I mean?
I never heard anybody say when you grow up in the hood, you don't know you're in the hood.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. I told somebody yesterday that when I met Queen Latifah, it was the first time I had seen black people not killing each other or shooting drugs or selling drugs.
Right.
So it was like, oh shit, like black people can actually be productive.
Right.
But it's crazy because I think that was probably my breakthrough, but I never heard it that way.
Yeah. And that was my experience until I moved to New York City. Like when I got to New York City, that was my eye-opening like Oprah aha moment. You know what I mean? It was like, whoa, there's so much more in this world than just having babies at the age of 14, fighting, you know what I mean? Getting guns and selling drugs and doing all this craziness. And you know, when I experienced that life outside of the hood, I wanted to make sure that I was able to somehow showcase that on my platform that you could really get out. Like it's and there is so much more out there than just what the cycle is happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cycle that's happening, you know what I mean? And nobody knows to break the cycle because the cycle is not even highlighted. They're not presenting it to these people. They're growing up thinking this is it. This is what it is. This is what it is.
So at what point did you actually understand or feel like, okay, I'm gay? Or
I felt like I was gay at the age of 12.
12.
Okay. For sure. Because that was my first gay experience. I had sex with a female at the age of 9.
Mm-hmm. It's normal in the hood. I mean,
to have sex,
And I had a mustache at the age of 9. You know what I mean? So like, I was already, I had went through puberty so fast that the first girl I had sex with was a 16-year-old girl, and I was telling her I was 12.
Oh, so you was lying?
I definitely was lying. But it was definitely peer pressure because like my older brothers, you know what I mean? They were really rough around the edges. And so like they were teaching me their bad habits and me just trying to fit in. I'm just like, you know, I guess I'll do it. I don't know what's happening right now. So I guess I'll do it. You know what I mean?
So your ethnic background is what? Puerto Rican?
I'm Puerto Rican and black.
Okay. And so your mom is Puerto Rican?
My mom is 100% Puerto Rican.
So were your mom and father together or?
No. Okay. My mom and father divorced in 2001. I believe I was 10 years old.
Okay.
I remember that like yesterday because it was such a big deal. Not that he was ever around to begin with, you know what I mean? But my mom I just seen the pain, you know what I mean? And just watching her go through that and not know what to do and us losing every single thing that we had, every single thing that was built, and watching her be stubborn and not really like understand, because she didn't want anything from my dad. She kept saying like, I don't want nothing from you. I don't want nothing from you. I don't want nothing from you. Not understanding you're affecting your children because now you don't have the means to take care of us. But you're not taking it from somebody else. And so now you're in a place where now we're struggling because of personal feelings. You know what I mean?
So how many siblings were growing up in the house?
Two older brothers, one younger sister. Mm.
Do you feel like that pride that your mom had kind of transferred over to you?
Absolutely. But you know what? Watching my mom evolve and watching her teach me that there is life after pain through her personal experience, I saw that she was able to basically acknowledge the fact that she was stubborn at that moment and she actually asked for forgiveness And I think that that was major. You know what I mean? To watch someone say, you know what? I fucked up. You know
so
what?
Are you and your mom close?
My mom's my best friend.
Good.
Like, so my mom is my heart.
When did you tell her you were gay or that you like boys?
Man, that was one of the life-changing moments for me because it was at the age of 22 that I didn't really want to tell her, but mm-hmm. she kept asking me, she said, why do you keep fighting with your best friend? Like, you guys go through these crazy mm-hmm. episodes. And it's like, she's like, I don't get what that is about. And I said, Mom, because it's my boyfriend. Like, and she was like, yeah, your boy, that's a friend, right? And I'm like, no, Mom, that's so my boyfriend.
So they always say moms know, like, your mom had no clue.
I said, Mom, you knew I was gay. Stop playing. The thing is, I'm not the straightest acting guy. You know what I mean?
Like, no, you're very masculine. You're not. I mean, I thought you were gonna be a little bit more feminine, but because you're a model.
I'm feminine. I feel like I have feminine ways. You know what I mean?
Well, listen, I've seen I know some sissies. There ain't no sissy in this room. But anyway, don't fucking come on my Instagram with that shit. All right, so when you told your mom that you like guys or that you were dating a guy, her immediate reaction was confusion. Man, and then what happened?
No, that she broke my heart, the biggest heartbreak of my life before until Michael, because she hung up the phone. And then
this was on the phone.
Yeah, I lived in New York City and she was still living in Camden, New Jersey, and she hung up mm-hmm. the phone, and I tried to call her back and she didn't answer the phone, and I would be like, tomorrow she'll get over it.
Mm-hmm.
And a month went by and I was like, yo, and me and my mom would talk every single day, like religiously. That was my thing. I would wake up in the morning, call my mom. My mom would kind of motivate me. You know what I mean? Right.
So was she religious or what was her?
My mom was
she Catholic?
My mom, Christian, like, Christian, yeah, right? Pentecostal.
Oh,
one of the most strict.
Right.
She went religion. To a straight out shouting experience when she hung up.
Oh
that
my
phone.
No, she cried and she just said she went into fasting. You know what I mean? Because that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to get her. She wanted to deliver her son. And I say that because, you know, whatever, I have my feelings on that. But that was the biggest heartbreak of my life, because being my best friend, not understanding. Because her biggest thing was, we're best friends, why did you lie to me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why all this time? Because she asked me multiple times. Because her boyfriend would tell her, like, yo, I think your son and his best friend are fucking. Mm-hmm. Like, and she would be like, why do you feel that? But he said, because when I walk in, they're like sweating. You know what I mean? Like something, like, you know what I mean? And I'm just being candid. You know what I mean? It is what it is.
Yeah.
But, and the crazy part is that I would always tell her, like, no, Mom, we're best friends. We're best friends. We're best friends. But in my heart, I wanted to tell her. Mm-hmm. And I felt like when she hung up on me, I felt like she should have felt that. Like, you know, you knew I wanted to tell you, but I know that because of your beliefs, you would have done exactly what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I woke up maybe after 2 months of her not calling me, and I actually went and bought a car, because at that time I had, you know, pretty good money. I was touring, singing, and I went and bought a car. Literally, I didn't even know how to drive. Like, I lived in New York City and I grew up not knowing how to drive. I drove to Camden, New Jersey, and I bought a bouquet of flowers. And when I opened the door, she was super surprised and she just started crying.
So like, do you regret telling her you're coming out on the phone?
I do feel, I do feel like I owed her a much more like respectful way of communicating that, for sure. Yeah.
Mm.
Now, I don't know, but isn't that like a personal thing? Like, kind of like how you wanted to deliver that?
But I think, you know, like I said, at the first season of Love and Hip Hop, when I threw that drink on Hazel and people didn't understand why and eventually found out what it was about, I ran into these kids. I've told the story on the show where the kids were just crying about how they wanted to kill themselves and mm-hmm. how their parents tried to beat the gay out of them, and how, and a lot of the, you know, if you watch, you know, if you, what's the documentary where on the houses?
Oh, the one where the one of the girls got killed.
Is it Paris Burning or something? The Paris is Burning. Okay, there's a documentary. You find out about all these houses, like the house of, not Milan. The house of Darion, but the house
like
of, you
Milan,
know,
Milan Extravaganza.
That these kids who become homeless because their parents put them out for being gay find themselves in a culture of support from people mm-hmm. who have these houses.
Right, right,
So, I mean, you know, I never said the words I'm gay to my family. Now, at first it was because I felt like it ain't nobody's business but mine.
Right.
But then I think in the background, it's the fear of hurting them or, you know, falling out. Not that falling out is always a bad thing, but you don't want to let people down.
Right. Like, yeah, judging. Right. And the judge.
Did you feel like your brothers knew?
You know, those are the people that I really never wanted to know. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because my brothers always called me gay my entire life. It was like, I know they didn't mean it today.
Were they street guys too?
They're still street guys to this day. They're very, very, very much. One is in jail right now, and the other, and Wilbur, I love you. My big bro, 100%. CMD, love you all day. And my other brother, Christopher, love you too. Ashley, my little sister, love you too. They're all, you know, they're all still in that mentality, unfortunately. But what was the question? Sorry.
No, I was just saying, did you think your brothers knew? I know your mom probably didn't know, but
they knew. They knew because they picked on me and they know they picked on me.
Well, and your family knows you too. Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, but you know, like I would go to Thanksgiving and they'd be like, well, how's your girlfriend? Like, you ain't never seen no girlfriends. What is you talking about? No, but your family has a way there. Okay, so
but even when I would bring girls home, like they would be like, oh shit, he actually has mad girls. But then they knew, they would be like, yo, but you also like, you bring guys. Like, and then they knew all the guys that I would bring would be like super, super, super attractive men. And they would be like, something's not right. You know right. what I mean? Like, it's either like, and I would have this like, you know, not so fashionable girl, you know what I mean? But some super, super duper fly guy. And they'd be like, this girl don't even like, you know, match your swag. And this one does. And
the true story. It is so funny. My grandmother had, cataracts. She had surgery, so she could see really clear. And one day, I remember I came with my friend to her house, and she's a messy, messy old bitch from Mississippi. And she said, boy, all your friends are so beautiful. And I said, well, thank you, Grandma. She goes, I mean, every single one of them are beautiful. Your family knows.
Right. Yeah. And you know, just to clear that up, like I think everybody's beautiful, and I don't think that the outside, the way I look at the world today is aesthetically is not what completes a look.
You better than me. I mean,
because I now Jason. Connect with people on an energy level for sure. Like I found like that connecting with people on a different level is what gives you longevity.
Yeah, and 100%.
And the outer shell is just the icing on the cake.
Right.
Like it's just like, okay, great. You look at them, but I've had connections with people that I have not been physically attracted to immediately, but then they become so beautiful to me later on after experiencing their personality, listening to their stories, and like. Just connecting with them on another level in which you can't connect with somebody else. You know what I mean? So
before we get into your journey to LA, you're from Camden, New Jersey. Recently, there's a guy in the news who was allegedly killed by the police or in police custody. Are you aware of that?
No.
That's in Patterson.
Jameek
Lowry.
He was from Camden, New Jersey, right?
No, it's Patterson.
Patterson.
That's like,
Is that New Jersey?
It's close. It's like an hour and a half away. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the culture? What's the culture like between the police and like people in the New Jersey?
Well, so the Camden police was so corrupt that they ended up getting dismissed, and then the feds ended up taking over. So that's how bad it was in Camden, New Jersey. That the whatever was being done, the cops were doing it too. The cops were selling drugs. The cops are the ones, you know.
Damn.
Yeah, the cops are the ones making
placement. No joke,
man. And you go up the street. Listen. When I would walk down the street, I would think that living in an abandoned home was normal. Like, it's nothing but abandoned homes and like crates on the floor. You have like bums living outside, not bums, homeless people. I hate that word bums, and I just used it. But anyway, like it's a serious situation, and I think even talking about it right now is great because it's like people should know that Camden has so many diamonds.
Right.
There's definitely diamonds in the rough because like I went to Creative and Performing Arts High School in Camden, New Jersey, and there's so many talented people there. It's a magnet school. So you have to audition to get in. There's so many talented people in Camden. And
there's an influencer in Camden right now. His name is Chink Capone on Instagram. And he has his own little thing, and I keep telling him like, you got to move out of there and start collaborating with people. And he tells me all the time, you do not understand. Camden is a different world. He always tells me this. Right. So it's, when I talk to him again,
it's 2 seconds from Philly, like literally 2 seconds. Right. I used to talk to a girl in Camden. I dropped her off one time. I was like, look, he never
looked back.
I'm never coming back.
This ain't gonna work out.
Even listen, if you stop at the red light. They got you. Like these people will, I'm telling you, they got you. Especially if you got a nice car and you look and you got money, it's a wrap. Mind you, I grew up there and I went back in 2014 and I was uncomfortable.
So you did.
And it changes just like that too.
Yeah.
So one day you decide to pack it up and move west and you get in your car and you leave and then you get here. And then what is your immediate reaction to getting here versus being there?
Oh, I hated it.
Is it complete? You hated it here?
Oh, I hated LA. Like, I fucking hated it.
Hate it because everybody's fake, or did you hate it because, why did you hate it?
Mind you, everybody says that. Everybody's like, oh, LA is the fakest place that you'll ever meet. But it's so fucking true. Like, I've never experienced the shit that I've experienced here in LA. Like, you will have somebody smiling in your face, like literally in your face. Or you will have somebody lying dead in your face that you did something. You'd be like, I fucked you? I fucked you? Damn, I must be fucking on drugs, bro. That's crazy. Like that's LA. I've never experienced that till I got here.
It's a different community for sure.
Like for example, when Michael died, what they were putting on Instagram was that I was fucking this dude. They're like, oh, a month hasn't even passed and you fucking this man.
So let's go back. So you get here. How soon after you arrived did you meet Michael?
3 months. Five months.
So tell people about that experience.
Yeah, what was that like?
The funny thing is, we had a mutual friend. His name was John. And I had a great relationship with John, and he had a great relationship with John. And for whatever reason, on Instagram had just become popping at that time. Like, people just started getting into it. So we were posting pictures at Malibu, and I saw a picture of them, a picture of Michael and him on Cinco de Mayo. And I was like, who's that kid? Like, who's that guy? And he was like, oh, that's one of my friends, whatever. He's a hoe. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then he was like, I said, but look at up still. Like, I, like, you know what I mean? Like, he looked good and like whatever. And then for whatever reason, when he posted a picture of me on his Instagram, Michael hit him up. And Michael, he was like, the crazy thing is, Michael's on the phone right now and he's saying that you look good. And he was like, but Michael, you don't want to date this man. He's a fucking hood rat. Like, he don't got shit. Like, why you want to date this man?
Damn. So you started by describing and I think this is important. You started by describing John as a friend.
Right.
Well, how did that type of person become a friend?
Because I didn't know who he really was. And he lived in LA, I lived in New York City. We would eventually, you know, fly back and forth, and we would, you know, right, what I mean, it'd be right. Mutual friends. So that's how we ended up meeting. And John actually dated my roommate, and that's how I met him in New York City. And they would go, and we would see each other all the time. So, but when I didn't know who he was, and I got here and I met that, I mean, when Michael told me what he was saying, I was like, that's crazy, because he was telling me this about you. Wow. And then we put two and two together, and we were like, oh, obviously, because when I was sitting on the couch, and I mean, I don't mean to put your business out there, John, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. Like, I was sitting on
John's Instagram is right here.
But John was like, he reached over to give me head, and I was like, the fuck?
He liked
both of us. Oh, and he was trying to keep us apart.
Divide and conquer. So wait, was this invited him, or John. He just thought it was just a Tuesday night and he thought it was time?
What do you mean?
No.
Okay. I never looked at that man like that. I mean, okay. At the end of the day, he's an attractive guy. But like I said, I'm not one of those people who sleep with people just because I think you're attractive. The outer shell, again, is the icing to the cake for me. I connect on a much deeper level. And that's why when people say that I'm out here fucking everybody, I'm like, you guys got it so fucking twisted. Like, you guys got the wrong person.
Well, honestly, I've never heard that about you. I'm in the streets. I'm in all the streets.
And
in
fact, I'm talking about the people who tag me and stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, hold on. But in fact, what I think about you is that this is the most I think I've heard you talk. So I don't know you to be as like involved in everybody's circle or whatever. Okay. So then you and Michael end up hanging out. And then how does... Tell me about, for people who don't know who Michael is, and for your friends who may not have known him as close as you, how would you describe Michael, and how would you help people visualize who he is?
Michael was an extremely creative person. Like, I've never met somebody who dug into his mind as much as he did. You know what I mean? Like, I sometimes would sit back and I would watch him, and he would always be like picking at his beard, and like just trying to figure out what his next move was. It was always like in hustle mode at all times. It never stopped for him. Like, it was like always, always, always about his career, his craft, his craft, his craft, his craft. And it was inspiring, because when I met him, I was about music. And like, he always wanted to make sure I always stuck to music. And the same thing that he wanted me in return for him, he wanted me to always make sure that he stuck with fashion. And so because we were like that, me watching him from the outside, I became the same person. You know what I mean? And we became the same person because we were just hustling together all the time. He is a person who gives his last to you, like literally would have a penny to his name, but he'll give you that penny. Like, he had a bad attitude. You know, that's just what it's, because to me, a creative, sometimes they don't understand that they're affecting others with their creative mind, because it's so fucking, you know,
all
tangled.
Over the place.
Yeah, it's tangled in knots. And sometimes you don't realize it when you get frustrated, like, I can't untangle this. And then somebody's talking to you, you're like, listen, like, give me a second. You know, it has nothing to do with like,
it's not personal.
It's not personal. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's more so like, listen, I got so much going on up here. Like, I got so much going on up here that I get why he was the way he was, is what I'm trying to say. And he knew what he wanted. He was very, a strong opinionated person. And to me, he was inspiring. Like, Michael was an inspiring person.
So how soon from when you guys started talking to and dating to you all moving, you moved in together, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so
a month.
In a month. Listen, our community people, look. I'm telling
you. Love somebody, you just love them.
Now that's the LA rent.
I met somebody and in 7 days I was like, move in.
Sometimes
pay on that rent.
Wait, it's listen. Really real because I feel like there are those times.
Falling in love at first sight.
There is that LA rent though, because there was one of
LA
those.
LA rent.
But there are those times where you meet somebody and the energy is just so cosmic that it's just like, I want to keep and bottle this and don't want to lose it.
And when you're spending time with someone all the time, you might as well stay with that person. Because it's like,
for sure.
I ain't staying in my house. I'm just waiting. Hello, rent is expensive. Okay.
When I met Michael, his energy was so vibrant. Like, and he would be so confused. Michael was very ditzy. So he would be so confused all the time, but he was so charming. They're like, I never wanted to be apart. Like, everybody who knew us, who did know us.
Well, you guys were.
We were one unit.
If you saw one, you saw the other.
If he flew, I flew. If I flew, he flew.
That's dope, though.
We were everywhere. If he did fashion, we were styling together as Time Man. And, like, the only reason why we stopped styling as Time Man is because I said, you know what? The world is starting to know me as fashion, and I don't want them to get confused about what I'm doing. You know what I mean? And Michael was very upset about that. Like, he was like, yo, you're ruining my brand because I don't want to change names like that. Like, what are you doing? You know, do you want to do this or do you not want to do this?
Right.
And so that's why I made the decision to go back to music.
So I love Brandy. Known Brandy for a long time. And I know that they had a special relationship. What was that relationship like?
A beautiful relationship. Brandy would always like make sure that she like let Michael know that energy was huge. Like that he needed to protect himself around the Hollywood energy. You know what I mean? Because it's very easy to get distracted. And she knew, because Brandy is one of those people who can do nothing but show love. I know from my experience from Brandy. You know what I mean? Like every time I talk to Brandy, every time I'm around Brandy, and every time Michael and I were around Brandy, like she always, we sat down and we had like talks about the world, about God, about like where we wanted to be, about like creative things and what we wanted to like create. Like everything about her was progressive. Everything was about moving to the next step,
elevating,
dope, yeah,
evolving, and talking about evolution, and talking about teaching each other where we're going to move. You know what I mean? And that's what she made me realize, that I wanted to be surrounded with nobody but her, some people like her. You know what I mean? People that caused me to think more, people that caused me to understand that there's more in life than to just do drugs and go party and to do things that are completely fucking unproductive.
Did you and Michael ever do drugs?
I definitely dipped into drugs for sure. I don't do drugs now. I smoke weed for sure all day.
Weed is not a drug. So what type of drugs have you? Medicinal. I mean, recreational cocaine. LA is cocaine.
I hate that I even experienced cocaine. You know what I mean? Because I always said in my life like that I would never do that. And growing up as a Christian, having that foundation, and then also like,
and you didn't have that in your family.
Was it your mom or your dad? Growing up over there on that side, on the East Coast, you're a crackhead if you do. You touch that, they'd be like, "Yo, you're a crackhead."
Wait. So back in, because I'm from LA. They're from the Midwest.
Chicago.
Is it Midwest? Philly is East Coast or Midwest?
East Coast.
Okay,
we right next to Camden.
So back there is cocaine looked down upon?
Yes.
Because in LA, it's like, if you don't do cocaine, they like, you don't do cocaine?
Cocaine is like a West Coast
thing. No, but I really, and I really want to highlight.
Thing, like a down South thing.
I really want to highlight cocaine though, because like cocaine is such a serious problem here in LA. And like you said, you see it everywhere you go. And this drug kills. Like, understand that. Like when it fucks with your serotonin levels, like, you don't understand. Yeah, it's fun that night. You live in your life. But when you wake up the next day and you feel that fucking deep ass sadness from what just happened, and you're not understanding that that is a come
down. That's Molly, too.
Molly is the worst.
It's worse.
Well, and that's why the people just keep doing it, because you want to keep that high.
You want that high, but then you don't understand the effects it is doing to your body. Mm-hmm. You're killing yourself slowly because your body, this is not normal. These are chemicals that are foreign, and your body can't digest these things.
So how did you get introduced to it, and how did you get introduced to it?
In the industry, you know what I mean? Like I fortunately have people in my life who always invite me places, you know what I mean? And I'm so thankful for that, because that's the reason why I'm here, you know, why people even see me, you know? Yeah. So, but it's kind of like a double-edged sword, catch-22 situation, because you also get introduced to a lot of things that end up causing things, you know, to end.
So were you and Michael introduced to it at the same time?
No.
Were you introduced to it first?
I was introduced to it much later in my life.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you guys now live together. You're in a relationship. You're in love. Mm-hmm. You're Thai man. So mm-hmm. you're one in one. Mm-hmm. You're in love. Mm-hmm. And you get engaged. So how do you guys go from dating to now engaged? You propose, he proposed?
I proposed. But we were living in downtown LA at that time, and we had a beautiful loft, and you know, and we were pretty successful for ourselves for that time, for being like little up and coming people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like little people in their crafts, making money, doing what they do. And so I was just like, yo, like I love everything about you. Like you meet everything that I would want in somebody. Like I feel like we connect on a deeper level. I feel like you're my everything. You know what I mean? So like, mm-hmm. why would I not want to spend the rest of my life with you? I have no interest in anybody else. Like, I'm a very monogamous person. I've been a monogamous person my entire life. Like I said, I have a Christian foundation. And although I'm not a Christian, I still have those strong beliefs and I keep that as my foundation.
Right.
And so like, yeah.
Wait, so tell me, because my proposal, I kind of see, you know, there definitely has to be an orchestra and doves. And I mean,
it was very.
That's only because I'm bougie. Now, fuck it, it can be over some pizza. So what was your engagement? What was your proposal like?
We had a big giant table in our loft, and so I filled the entire table with candles in cursive that said Michael Mann, and then I had a bouquet of flowers with a white cake that had like pearls on it, and it was very personal. It was just when he walked in coming home from work, I came in with no, you know what I'm saying, with a little sexy outfit on.
Okay.
and like I had the tub ready for him, you know what I mean. It was kind of like one of those romantic situations, and It was normal. We were romantic with each other all the time. So in his mind, he's just like, oh, this is one of those regular days.
Yeah.
But Michael yearned for marriage. So this, I knew it was 2 years in. So I knew that it was going to be major when I actually pulled out the ring. Because he kept asking to marry me. I wasn't ready at that time. Mm. So like when I pulled out the ring in the bathroom, we were in the tub. He was like laying in front of me. I was behind him. And I had the ring like literally behind. So I pulled the ring like this. And I was like, and he was like, he just started crying.
Mm. And so how did that feel?
Like
take your time.
I'm sorry. Like that was some of the best moments of my life. Like, and we had bad arguments, you know what I mean? Like we were just like everybody else, you know? Like we fought all the time and we definitely had our fucking problems, but I've never met somebody who I connected with on that level. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he's my everything.
So of course he said yes, and now you're engaged. Mm-hmm. And so this was, I think, the perplexing thing for me because Hollywood Unlocked, I live in Hollywood, but I also live online. And I followed you two because in Hollywood, it's very rare to see a relationship between two men who both are attractive, both seemingly successful, who both compliment each other well, and both, like, when you see one, you see the other. Mm-hmm. You don't hear any drama between them and other people. Bullshit. You know, not messy.
Right.
And the thing I think for me about not really dating a lot of gay men, because I like to date guys who are interested in gay men, is because it's hard to find, and I mean this, it's hard to find two gay men who aren't messy.
Right.
Man.
Who are together. So what was perplexing was watching your post and everybody else's post about the suicide. And I think, you know, given that mental health is a real issue in our community and people of color, and the fact that I've seen a lot about the life of them, I don't know much about what happened. So
right.
I would love for you to tell the story of what happened. How did it happen?
Well, first, I'm just going to be honest, and I want to say, you know, I want to pay respects to his mother. And I'm not going to delve too deeply into anything because I want to respect her. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But I will say this. And like, it's very important that we ask each other how we're doing. Mm-hmm. Because Michael seemed to be so happy. You know what I mean? Like, we talked about marriage in Paris on the Eiffel Tower. Like, we had so many plans. Like, literally, we were supposed to get married on his 30th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was supposed to be, like, the big, like, situation we had saved to get to that point. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And so I knew that he didn't want to go. And that's what I'll say. I know that he didn't want to go.
Okay.
And I know that situations ended up happening that ended up altering his mind to make that decision. You know what I mean? And it sucks that it only takes 1 second. It sucks that all they have to do is just one thing and it's done. You know what I mean? Right. So that's why I say it's very important to ask people how they're doing, to look for the signs, because I didn't notice the signs until it happened. Mm. It was like, oh my God, this happened. Like he said this and he said that and he said this. Fuck. You know what I mean? Like that's what I went through. Mm-hmm. I went through that situation like, yo, he was asking for help.
Right. And what were some of the like the signs?
Like for me, he ended up dropping me off at one of the shoots that I had to do. Mm-hmm. And he drove to the corner. And that morning I had a dream that
This is the last time you saw him?
The last day I saw him. It was at 7:00 in the morning. And we had partied that night up until 6 in the morning. Mm. And I had a shoot at 7 in the morning. That was our cycle of things. You know what I mean? Like we would always party, work. There was never resting time. So understand where the mind is. You know what I mean? The mind is lost. The mind is fucking confused. The mind doesn't know what's happening. So I'm at a place where I'm not catching the signs. He's at a place where he's just feeling whatever he's feeling. You know what I mean? So I woke up that morning. I had a dream that I had died and I was crying. I was like, yo, like I'm fucked. Like he was like, what's wrong? And I was like, yo, I had a dream that I was on a plane. The door opened and I felt the air falling down. I felt my shit, me hit the floor, everything. I felt the whole shit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I woke up crying. And he was like, that means you're going to have the biggest heartbreak of your life. And I was like, what? I was like, did you cheat on me? I don't know why I said that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why that came to me. I was like, did you cheat on me? Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, Ty. I got you. You got me. I will always love you. And I will never leave your side. That was sign number one. Mm-hmm. When he said, I'll never leave your side.
But how was that a sign, though?
Because Michael wasn't that person. Michael never was affectionate like that. Michael was not that person. And he was being so fucking loving. Like, it was on a level that was altered, for sure. You know what I mean? Like, he was like, I love, like, just like being poetic. You know what I mean? And being, like, just weird. Like, it wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. He was like, you know, I'll never leave you. You're too beautiful to cry. Like, I don't want to see you crying. And he started crying. Mm-hmm. And then he drives to the corner after dropping me off at a shoot. He's like, Ty. Again, Michael's not that person. Like yelling out of the, like Michael's very reserved, very quiet. Like, And so to even hear him yelling from a corner to yell my name, I'm like looking at him like side. I'm like, dude, why are you screaming? And he was like, you're too beautiful to cry. Sign number two. You're too beautiful to cry. Why? Like, yeah, I was crying, but it's like, what are you saying? Mm-hmm. Then sign number three was when he drove away and he called me and he said, hey, babe, I'm going to sleep and I'm going to get us some outfits for everyday people. That day we were supposed to go to everyday people. And he was like, so call me at 8:00. And I said,
8 p.m.
8 a.m.
8 a.m.
Okay. Yeah. Because it was 7 a.m. at that time. And he was like, but call me at 8:00. OK. And I said, cool. He hung up the phone. I went into my shoot. He then called again. And he was like, Ty, respect my wishes. OK. Sign number three. Respect my wishes and do not call me until 8:00.
Did you ask him why he said that?
Yeah, I said why. He was like, because I haven't slept. I want to sleep. Mm-hmm. He was like, so please, like, don't. Yeah, he was like, don't. I'm going to put my phone on do not disturb. Don't think I'm doing anything. Don't freak out. Like, just respect my wishes and don't call me until 8:00. 8:00 come. I dial the phone. No answer. So I was like, I ended up texting him saying, well, I'm sure you're still sleeping beautiful. I said, but call me whenever you wake up. I think I'm sure you're not even going to wake up till 5:00. And Michael had this thing where he would sleep until 5:00. And he's like all up all night, sleep until 5:00, up all night. And I'm like, I'm sure you'll wake up at 5. But we got to go to everyday people. So make sure you get our outfits. And then no response. But then I looked at my email and he had emailed me at 7:58 the goodbye letter.
Do you have the letter?
I still have the letter.
Can you read the letter?
Out of respect for his mom, because she actually asked not to even show the letter, because the letter said stuff about why. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's a deeper situation than I could. Out of respect, I can't be that person to, like, out that. You know what I mean? Out of respect for her.
Sure.
Like, because she...
Did he...
She's really affected by it.
Mm-hmm. was his reason? Did he, I mean, can you share his reason for suicide? I mean, a lot of people don't understand it. I mean,
he wanted peace, he said.
Mm-hmm. Was he close to his mother, or were they kind of like a...
He was definitely close to his mother. They were like best friends. They fought like best friends. They loved like best friends. They were like, yeah, they were watching their relationship with everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, that's why I had a respect for her. Like, mm-hmm. she's a beautiful person. So it's like, I would never do her like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But different people leave the earth for different reasons, or voluntarily leave the earth for different reasons. Some chemical, some drug dependent, some is family or relationship. Did it have anything to do with you?
With me?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like in a way I played a role in the stress factor. You know what I mean? Because when you're in a relationship with somebody, like, you guys go through turmoil. You know what I mean? You guys go through things. And like, I can't say that I didn't play a role in like us having problems sometimes. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, there was, I'm one of those people who like to post shirtless photos on my Instagram. He was one of those people who liked to post shirtless photos on his Instagram. Mm-hmm. So that caused, people to reach out in certain ways. And so, like, that would be kind of like our friction sometimes. Because we, in the beginning, I didn't have a body. I grew up a chunky my entire life. You know what I mean? So I never even knew about a body until I met Michael. It was like he inspired me to become fit. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw him posting shirtless photos on Instagram, I was like really like taken back. Like, yo, what is the purpose of you doing that? We're in a relationship. Why are you posting all these shirtless photos? And that became like a friction between him and I. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, when I get a body, because I started going to the gym, I was like, when I start posting, shirtless photos, don't be mad. But not understanding what I had now I put into manifest. Right. You know what I mean? Now I just I was speaking death into our relationship. Mm-hmm. Because instead of being like, yo, let me go to the gym so we can both look good and be out here swagging together. Now I'm saying, when I get out there, I'm going to come at you. You know what I mean? Because what you did to me. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so that's where we had our.
So was it life stress that you think was what became the final thing?
He said he wanted peace. He said he never. That one thing that I feel like I can communicate is that he said he felt like he never in his life ever felt peace. And that's one of the things that he felt like he needed to seek for.
Mm-hmm. And so you're texting, no answer. Then what?
I just ran out.
Got it. Okay.
I literally just, like, the second I saw the email, and mind you, the shoot was like not even like half a mile away. So like, I was trying to order my Uber, and you know how your iPhone takes your apps off and it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It goes into like the iCloud or something. Yeah. So I was trying to download the Uber and it wasn't fucking downloaded. I'm like, fuck. So I started running, and I started running because obviously he had said in the letter that he had already did whatever it is that he did.
So let me stop you without getting into the details of the letter, and I respect, you know, the family's wishes. Did he say in the letter that he was leaving?
Mm-hmm.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
So you're reading this letter. When you got the email, you weren't expecting an email because he just told you don't bother him because I'm going to sleep.
I wasn't even checking my emails because I'm in a shoot. You know what you're I mean? Right. Like, I wasn't even checking my phone like that. I just, because I had reminded myself to call him at 8 was the only reason why I ended up, when you pick up your phone, you automatically go to Instagram.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I went to Instagram, I went to my emails, I just was like, just checking my shit. And that's when I saw it and I was like, fuck.
Was the email just to you?
The email was to me, to 7 people.
To 7 people. And was his mother one of those people?
Yep.
So that was the only goodbye
he gave. She didn't even see the email until I called her to let her know it happened.
Okay, we're going to walk through that. So you get the email. Your heart's racing while you're reading the email.
I don't, like, when I tell you, I don't even know what was happening at the moment. Like, all I remember is, like, blacking out. Like, all I remember is running, my thighs burning. Like, I remember my thighs hurting so much because I couldn't run anymore. Like, I was like.
So you ran all the way home?
I ran all the way there. Like, I ran not stopping. When I got there, the fucking paramedics were trying to, like, say, like, yo, you need to relax. Because I was hyperventilating. You know what I mean? Because the adrenaline running through my body of not knowing what to do and trying to just get there. And by the time I got there, like, all I saw was sirens. Like, I heard the sirens. I saw all the lights. I saw the caution tape. I'm like.
Who called?
His best friend, because she received the email, too.
Got it.
So she had called, you know, she was the first one to get it, and she had called immediately. So thank God somebody had saw the email first. But even then, by the time the police had got there, they said he had already done it 42 minutes ago.
Mm. All right. So by that point, had they taken him out of the apartment, or were you able to see him?
We waited there for like 3 hours till the coroners got there.
Mm. Wait, so they left it, his body was still inside?
Mm-hmm.
So were you able to be with the body? And
no.
Let me tell you why. So, okay, because when my brother was murdered,
I was being investigated.
Why?
Because they were like, why didn't you call the cops? I wasn't thinking, you know what I mean? I just started running. Like my thing, my mind wasn't, my mind wasn't in a place to like press 911.
Stop it.
And in my mind, it was
hard to explain to people how to explain why you are going through something where you're going through.
And I'm one of those people, it's very hard for me to cry. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like even when I do cry, once I get there, that's why I stop myself. Because mm-hmm. once I start crying, like I can't stop. It's like, and I don't like sinking. I'm very much aware of my mind and I pull myself up very fast. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're not, fuck that. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, yes, it's healthy to cry.
But don't you think there also has to be a place where you are able to mourn? Because.
And I do that privately because I feel like a lot of people, like I have my own connection with Michael. You know what I mean? Like I go to his gravesite probably more than anybody has ever gone. I don't even know if anybody goes there or not. You know what I mean? I sleep there sometimes. I go write music there. Like I talk to him. I still feel him. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like he's my light. You know what I mean? Like he's in everything that I do. And so like, even like I did a music video recently and like, I swear to God in the sky, the clouds created an M. Like I did a fucking, another fucking photo shoot. And for whatever reason, every time I'm doing something, I feel like he just shows up in different ways. You know what I mean? And it could be mental. It could be me mm-hmm. mind fucking myself. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, I still feel him.
So his mother hadn't received the email and then mm-hmm. you called her. What was that conversation like?
I was screaming to the top of my lungs, just like trying to get her to pick up the phone because she wasn't picking up at that moment. Like she was just like, I guess, sleep. And I was just calling everybody. I think I was, all I kept doing was dialing numbers because I was like trying to say like, help. The cops were not letting me go move anymore. Everybody was surrounding me because they were like, you can't go anywhere. You're being investigated. And they're like, this person can't do this. This person can't do that. But when I called his mom, she had already like, we all knew that because Michael had previous attempts. You know what I mean? Mm. We all knew that it was a possibility that it would happen at some point. So that's why it made it worse. You know what I mean? Because we're all like, it happened. What we all feared to happen, happened.
So the signs were all there.
He suffered from before I got there from Michael's stories to me that he had attempted suicide
before your relationship.
Before our relationship.
So when you told her, did
she's and they all knew that too.
But when you talked to her, what was the first thing you said to her?
I said he's dead.
Just like that.
Yep. And she said what? And I said Michael is dead. Wow. But I was screaming and weeping to the like. On high levels, like I can't even describe how I felt at that moment. Like I couldn't even talk. Like I was just like, he's dead. Like a girl, you know what I mean? Like, and she was like, what? Like, what's going on? Calm down. Like, relax, relax, relax. And I was like, just weeping. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know how to feel at that moment. It was just like, he's dead. Like, you're not fucking listening to me. He's fucking dead.
But was there any part of you that was mad?
I'm still mad. Mm-hmm. I'm still mad to this day. I'm hella fucking mad. I get so angry because I'm like, why the fuck would you do that? Like, why would you do that? Like, you had so much fucking going for yourself. This man was booked and fucking blessed. He had so much going for himself.
But I'm talking reason. But I'm talking about more mad about how selfish, suicide is very selfish, right?
Yeah, because like you're not his mom, like, his brothers, his friends, and me.
But you, is what I'm saying. You know, you're his life partner. You live together. You work together. You're together. Like I said, when you see one, you see two. So it's like, I've always, you know, I've had my thoughts. I think everybody has the thought of leaving because you just be like, life gets heavy at times, mm-hmm. right? But the idea of leaving and affecting so many people, I think, stops a lot of people from doing that.
Well, yeah, my immediate reaction to Michael leaving was suicide too. Mm-hmm. Like I tried to commit suicide 3 times after he left. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until me waking up and realizing, because I was also under things that were altering my mindset. The thing that I turned to immediately was drugs. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't want to feel pain. It was like, no, I need a Xanax. I need a Xanax. I need a volume. I need a volume. I need a volume. Like somebody give me a volume. That's why the first thing that I did was, and I went out partying. Like I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And it was so unhealthy because I got to a point where I could see my ribs. Like I was so unhealthy.
I can see you, and you were posting the death so much that I was wondering, was anybody checking? I had DM'd you. Yeah. I was like, hey, you know.
Right, and I appreciate that so much.
Did people reach out to you? Like, were people checking on you regularly, making sure you were good? Did people abandon you? Did you feel like?
I was overwhelmed by a lot of love. Like, when I tell you, if it wasn't for the amount of love that I got, or even the people who came to save me when I was doing things, like I said, I tried to commit suicide. I was in a hospital, and the person who stood by my side, I won't say their name, but they know exactly who they are. Like, if that person wasn't in my life, I would be gone. You know what I mean? Like, and that person also was the person who ended up explaining to me, like, and having me have another aha moment that I have purpose. You know what I mean? I'm here for a reason. I'm here to, I'm here to do so many more things. And like, that's why I said it's very important to talk to your friends, because your friends are the reasons sometimes why people don't make these decisions. So yeah, I received so much love from everybody on so many levels.
So a lot of people donated to the GoFundMe account for his funeral, and you started that account, correct?
Right. Out of like being in a complete desperation of, because his mom wanted to cremate him. And me and Michael had conversations about if we had died before, like what we would want, you know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. And so when I heard that, like, I immediately was like, no. And I didn't, at that time, I didn't have $27,000 to go pay for a funeral. You know what I mean? Cause that's what it costs to do a funeral at that place. Mm. And so like, I knew that Michael deserved, because he was this person who loved that life. You know what I mean? That was his thing. I didn't even know that life until I met him. You know what I mean? So it was like, he loved that. So why not let him go the way that he was? You know what I mean? I feel like he deserved that, especially him being surrounded by so many people who could give him that. You know what I mean? True. So me not having the money to give him that and doing that, I said to his mom, listen, if I raised the money, would you be able to give him that funeral? And she said, yes. So that's what I did. Mm. And at that time, amazing. I was so mind altered too. You know what I mean? Like, I was under the influence. I was in pain trying to figure out life. I was like begging, you know what I mean? Like, yo, I need help. Please. I don't want this to happen this way.
So I don't think a lot of people understand, like, when people die, whether they're killed or they kill themselves, that the process of packing their clothes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know,
I didn't want anything.
Oh my God.
Like, you know what?
I'm
going to be completely candid in this situation. Like, when Michael died, him and I had everything joint. We had already lived a life as if we were like married. You know what I mean? So like, when his mom being the head of state, you know, she comes in and Michael has bills. Michael has things. He actually has an office and he has a company. You know what I mean? So you have all of these bills coming in, all of these invoices and stuff like that. And then you have like hit the office, because it's commercial. You have to pay up the whole year. You know what I mean? There was all these things that were coming in, and she's like, I can't do this. So it's like, I need to take everything. So now I have nothing at this moment. You know, not this moment right now, meaning at that moment when it happened, like, you stripped me of all my stuff.
She did.
Yeah.
Stripped you.
Stripped me. Stripped, because she said that's what she had to do, meaning money-wise. Because I was like, yo, this is my money too. I was like, this is my money too. Why is everything gone? Like, why are we taking all the money? Like, what's going on? And she's like, because Michael has X, Y, and Z. Like, I can't do all, and then plus the funeral and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, so what about me? Like, what do I do? So that's why it was like, in that moment, it's like, yo, I don't know what to do. So I went to go live with friends. And she was like, well, if you're going to do a GoFundMe page, it needs to all go under me. And that's what I ended up doing. She ended up taking that entire, the $18,000 or whatever that was raised. They put it against the funeral. The funeral still had money to pay. So she had to end up coming out of pocket for that too.
Mm-hmm. So how did you feel about all that? I mean,
I was hurt, because like, at the end of the day, like, they knew our relationship.
But this is why it's important, and people that don't understand the Equality Act and gay people being able to get married to their partners, because when you don't have the ability to get married, like, for example, if the law wasn't in place and Obama hadn't passed that, you wouldn't even had an opportunity to have a say so.
Right.
And people don't understand, like, if you're on life support or you're in the hospital or you need a blood transfusion or you know you're incapacitated or you die, your partner could be living with you as a partner or whatever, could not have any say so.
Right. Exactly. And that played a major role in like me being so affected and having to go and turn to drugs. You know what I mean? Because I'm just like, yo, you go from living a comfortable life to now being like,
what's happening?
What am I gonna do? And so, like, me, like, going, I actually went a month after that is when I woke up, because I had gotten to a place of almost, like, disappearing from the world. And I'm like, yo, I can't do this to myself, because I know what Michael did to me internally, what he did to his mother.
You mean by committing
suicide? By doing that. You know what I mean? And the effect that he did on a massive level. You know what I mean? Like, the amount of people who came out to support for him. Like, even like through Instagram and through all that stuff, it was like, yo, you affected so many people. Even to this day, people still reach out talking about like the inspiration that he had, like, and the effect that he had on them through his fashion and stuff like that. Wow. So it's like, it sucks. Mm-hmm.
And so what has been your experience looking back on it all that you like your greatest takeaway?
My greatest takeaway is that like love transcends and love doesn't end. And it's not just here for the physical. Like I'm connected to him forever. Like I took away that you can connect with a human being to the point where no matter what, whether the physical avatar is here or not, like you guys will always have some sort of connection. That's why I say everywhere I go, he's with me. Like, and right now I don't desire anybody else. You know what I mean? Like I go out and I party and I have fun because I'm a human being and I do what I do and I don't give a fuck. Like it is what it is. I am who I am and I just don't desire nobody else right now. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that day will not come. I think one day I will be able to move on. It's just not here yet. You know what I mean? And I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with like still meeting my needs when I need to. You know what I mean? To me, that's not, that has nothing to do with connecting.
It's not betrayal. I mean,
right.
So do you consider the relationship over?
No. I feel like me and Michael will have a connection up until I feel like that connection needs to end. You know what I mean? Right now, I'm in a place where we're still connected, but I do understand that me being a human being and yearning love and needing love, that eventually is going to have to come. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, so what advice would you give to people who may be living with people or have relationships with people in their family or in their lives who are struggling with, you know, mental health issues or drugs or anything that could be, you know, leading towards where Michael went?
I would tell people to honestly, like, focus on being happy. Like, a lot of the times we stress about bills, we stress about things in the world, and, like, if you can't change something, don't stress about it. Because guess what? If it's supposed to happen, it's going to happen. If you have something in the world that's yours, it's yours. Like, it's not going to, nothing can change that. As long as you're putting out the work that you're supposed to do, then it's going to come to you. Because guess what? The universe rewards work. What you put out comes back to you. That's all you need to worry about. A lot of people are stressing about the wrong things. Ask your friends how they're doing. Motivate them on a daily basis. Tell them how good they are and how much they have in this world to give. Like, a lot of the times we're hating on each other. Always hating. It's like when somebody's successful, you have the next person coming in. Oh, that looks ugly. Like, that looks bad. Like, why are they doing it like that? It's like, why can't you be like, yo, they doing their shit. Like give them their props. Everybody's hating on each other. You know, so I would say, like, just be happy. Focus on being happy.
You know what's interesting is if you really think back to the moment you got the email, which I can think back to the moment that my brother was murdered, or if anybody's gone through anything really significant like that, at that very moment, you realize that nothing else matters. Like the stuff that matters so much today, right now,
it doesn't matter at all.
There's greater, bigger things out there that could make you feel the way you think
1,000%.
You're feeling.
1,000%.
Well, listen, I appreciate you coming on and telling your story. Like I said, it's been something that I've been just watching and just not, even not really knowing you guys personally. Every time I've run into you guys, I mean, it's always been love. He's always, you know, Michael didn't really say much, but it was like, hi.
Right. He was very quiet.
I just felt it was a story that needed to be told because there are people out there who are struggling with it. And I had seen something online one day. Somebody said, I think it was Melissa. She had posted something and said, check on your strongest friends. Because sometimes you think that the strongest friends don't need you to be checked on.
But right. They
you know what it is? People think that Instagram is the end all be all. Yes. Like we think that what the life that we post is like the reality of everything.
Absolutely.
And it's like, yeah, these successes are happening, but this is like 0.0002% of what's really happening. You know what I mean? So it's like, understand that the people who you seem to be the most successful sometimes are the ones who are at the most need of help, especially mentally, or even going through these parties and living this industry life. Like, they need to understand these people are sometimes mentally fucked and we need to help them out. You know what I mean? And bring them back down, pull them up. Like Beyonce says, you know what I mean? Like, you need friends to always pull you up.
Well, I'm hoping that this interview helps somebody and that people share
it. I hope so too.
And so what are you working on now?
I'm working on my album. My album's entitled Steven. It's a 6-song EP, and it's going to be released next month. I have a show coming up in February 11th in New York City at the Rockwood Music Hall, stage one. I'm like just focusing on like trying to heal people through my music. I want to tell my story through my music and like just vent, because you know what I mean? Like my way of releasing my frustrations is through my art. And sometimes I don't really care. Like the other day I went on my live and I was like sounding crazy and I didn't really care. You know what I mean? Because it was like,
you have to do that.
At that moment, that's my release. You know what I mean? And showcasing that sometimes helps me out, because like people, like when I tell you the amount of people who hit me up on a daily basis, like, yo, you inspire me.
Right.
Like you inspire me to keep going. Like you saved me from committing suicide that day. Or, you know, watching you come out of something like this and then still keep going and watching you trying to be happy inspires me. That's my, now that I realize that's my focus. Like understanding you need to be an inspiration to everyone. Me to you, you to me. This is an everlasting cycle, and it should always be nothing but inspiration.
It's true.
Well, I'm glad that you have the courage and the strength to tell your story, and I hope people follow you, and we'll keep following you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you guys
on.
So much thank for having you. Me. I really appreciate it. I love meeting you guys.
And we're out of here. Peace. Hey.
Peace.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.